I would like to take this opportunity to thank the organizers for invitation, and this has been a very nice conference so far. Okay, so I'm going to talk about an effective Schmidt subspace theorem for projective varieties over function fields, and this is a joint work with Minru. Okay, so I think over this semester, people have been talking about the connection between number theory, Diophantine approximation, and the Nevalina theory. So, and today I'm going to talk about the function field case. So, let's see, in number field case, and in complex case, and on this side, we have the second main theorem. And in number field, we have Schmidt subspace theorem. Okay. And for complex case, there are more. They are moving target problems. So, moving target. And usually we consider slow growth. Okay. And what's in between is function field. There's a bridge here. What I mean is algebraic function field of an algebraic variety. Okay, so in function field, the function field you can take, so suppose it's a function field of a projective normal variety or projective non-singular curve. Then for every divisor, you can define valuations. And you also have some formula tell you the number of poles equal to the number of zeros. That's similar to product formula in number theory. Okay, so function field on one hand behave like a number field. Okay, so you can consider all the Diophantine approximation problems for function field. But on the other hand, a function field inside its algebraic functions, so it also behaves like a complex functions. So you can also think about Second-Man theorem and also Second-Man theorem with this with a coefficient to be functions. So in here, we also have, we have a Second-Man theorem, means you have a constant coefficient for the linear forms. And then we also, then for function field, we don't have slowly growth target. Everything is the same growth. So, and this, for this part, is closer to this number field case. So let's just write the Schmidt subspace theorem. Okay. So actually, for this case, this is so much more similar to this number field case. So once you have a proof for the number field case, you can sort of translate all the proof directly to here. But the advantage of this proof is that for number field case, all the proof for Rose theorem or Schmidt theorem, we don't have effective version. I mean, for precise bound, we don't have effective version. But so therefore, if the proof is translated from number field, then you don't get the effective version for function field also. And so starting from my thesis, I'm working on function field problems, we try to take tools, because you have all this analog. So you want to take techniques from Nevalina theory to work for function field. But eventually we want to study the Diophantine approximation problems, which is in the spirit of number field. Okay. So in one way you can think about this Schmidt subspace theorem as a moving target problem with the same growth, but if you have been to Detloff's talk, you know, there is still some difference there. So it's not completely the same. Okay, but it's actually more close to number of your case. Okay, so why, what's the difference? What is the problem with this? If you are thinking about moving target problem with the same growth, what would be the difficulty here? So if you think about for complex case people, we are very happy with the slowly growth to say we have a function or we have some map which is linearly non-degenerate over slowly growth field, right? We would be happy to do that. But if you are working for same growth, then what would that be? You cannot say it is algebraic non-degenerate over this same growth function field, right? So that's the problem here. And how to overcome this type of problem? So for this, so we can still use the technique from here. But for this function field case, if you want to get the result of this linear non-degeneracy condition, you really have to be very careful. You have to work over a vector space with weight, with certain height. And then you have to talking about linear non-degeneracy over a vector space of certain height, and then do all the stuff. But still, we are not happy with that kind of statement. So how to overcome that? You need to say the thing that doesn't hold only for finitely many hyperplanes. Okay, so that's one difficult step. Okay, and how to overcome this type of problem? And then we really need to use Voitas machinery to overcome, to eliminate all those things, to all those exceptional sets to finitely many in his American Journal paper. It's Journal of American. Sorry. Sorry, I'm too nervous. Sorry. Okay. And so anyway, so just to give you some idea about how this can be different. Okay, but this is not the main topic I want to talk about. So for Schumitter subspace theorem over function field, the first one to do it is Ratliff. Use the method similar to number field case. And for effective version, it's done by myself. Okay, so this is the history. And today I'm going to talk about something more general. So today I'm going to talk more general case. So for Schmidt subspace theorem or Second-Man theorem, we talk about linear forms. But then today we want to talk about. Review a little bit about history again. So we want to talk more generally, not linear forms on PN, but hyper surface. Okay, and then we want to talk about not just PN, not just projective space. We want to talk about projective varieties. So for this case, and also hyper surface devices. Okay, so again, let's look at what the people's contribution here. For number field, this is first done by Kobajang, Zanian in 2004. And I think they initiated this filtration method, which is very nice. And then for complex case, complex analog is done by Min Ru in 2004. And then we have been Detloff's talk. So the moving target case is done by Detloff and Tan for the moving target case. So I think it's just right 2008. Okay, and for function field, sum by n and myself in 2007. Okay, so this is for this case, and basically it's all set. So for general variety, and considering hyperservice divisors means you are taking hyperservice cut with X. And this is done by efficacy and variety. And the reference I have is from 2008, but I think the archive version appeared quite early. So let's just write earlier. Okay. And for the complex part, it's bound by Minzhu, and it's accepted in 2008. And so today I'm going to talk about this function for your case. I'm sorry, this is the effective version. So today I'm going to talk about this effective version with Minzhu. And any question? Okay. So let me begin with some terminology for function field. Okay, so you may call ask me if I'm going to talk about C. So at the beginning, I take my notes as K, but the characteristic is zeros, but now I'm going to write a C. Otherwise, it is going out. Okay, so just take any algebraic closed field of characteristic zero. And let me just take a smooth algebraic curve, projective algebraic curve over K. And it's okay to take a projective normal variety. But for simplicity of talk, let's just take a phi to be curved. And we always denote by K to be the function field of phi. And we know that for a point in this curve, this is a point, and on a smooth projective algebraic curve, so it would correspond to an order. And this is a map of to integers, we normalize in this way, and we all know that the sum, we have a power order will be equal to the zero order, so it's the sum formula here. So for all non-zeros. Okay, so we can define height. So height of X is defined to be the order of poles. So it's the degree here, if you like to think. Okay. And we are going to work for Pn, so let me define the general height here. So suppose we have a point. And we define the ramification order, which is the minima order. And we define height. To be sum over all the minima orders. Okay, so let me see. So I also need to so remember now we are working with so we want to consider this polynomials. So let me define this. So these are homogeneous polynomial of degree D. And let me write this as a sum ai x0 i0 xn in. So we will define the ramification for for the polynomials. So this would be also taking minima. And then we want to define height of a polynomial. And again, you take a minima of this ramification order. Okay, so for complex case, we have a proximity function. And for function field, we like to say it is a wave function. So let me say what is the wave function here. So corresponding to this polynomials, we have wave function. This is a point, and this is a polynomial. And this is a point in Pn. And this is defined to count the order of Qs at P. And then we normalize. So it won't depend on the choice of coordinates. And this is always positive or equal to zero. Okay, this is our Weyl function. So if you don't like this, think of it as the proximity function. And now we have a projective variety of dimension n. And it's defined over this function field. And we will consider homogeneous polynomials. And each of them are degree di. And q greater or equal than n. So always q has to be greater or equal than n plus 1. Otherwise, it's trivial. And then we talk about in general position, which means we want to assume they are in general position with x. So which means the intersection. If you have n plus 1 of them, the intersection has to be empty. Okay. And also one more notation. We always use dx for degree of x. Since we already have our embedding here, so this makes sense. Okay. And I probably should point out here for moving target case over complex case, internal position condition is different. Okay, but here we make this assumption, it's okay. Okay, so now, after all this terminology, we can have our main theorem. Here. So, after you have blah, 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 blah. So our main theorem says, sorry, it's a very long main theorem. So under these assumptions, we say if given any epsilon bigger than zero, then we can find the effective computable finite union of proper algebraic subsets in Pn, and also effective computable constants C and C prime. Such that for every point in this variety, you know, omit those exceptional sets, either the height is bounded, or we have this estimate. Okay, and furthermore, we can say that this not only this can be effectively computed, the degree has a bound, and the bound is here. And D is the LCM of D1 to DQ. Okay. So this is the statement of the main theorem. So how do we prove something like this? So the method is the following. So first, we will do a reduction to another variety to linear case. Okay. But still not linear case yet because we are in we are not in PN, we are in a variety. So still, anyway, we'll do one reduction to another variety with coordinated hyperplanes. And then we will use this in general position assumption to link this part of values to char weight. Okay. And then after we have we write this as in terms of char weight, then we know there is a lemma of efficacy and variety. They have a relation between char weight and the Hilbert weight. And Hilbert weight is much better to compute. Why is that? Hilbert weight works for vector space. And for vector space, we can do some trick. Then we make it into the projective case. And with linear forms and over there, we can use the original second main theorem. So that's the trick here. So let me begin with the proof. Okay. So let me do the first reduction, how to transfer this problem into coordinate hyperplanes and another variety. So first, let's consider the map. Let's put x into P of Q minus 1. And let's put this point. Just take Q1, x, d, d1. Q, d, dn. Again, d is the LCM. Okay, so this is a morphism because the thing is is in general position with x. So this is a morphism and from a projective variety into PN. So therefore the image space is also a projective variety. And also the dimension is the same. And we can also have bound on degree. Okay, because y is in here, and we have the degree bound. Okay, so now, this is the thing we want to estimate, and now we transfer this into here. So in other words, we are making this hypersurface into coordinate hyperplanes. And we also have the in general position property with this hyperplanes. Okay, so now we are transfer problem to, instead of x, we go into y. And instead of hypersurface, we make it into coordinate. And we have estimate on dimension and degree. So it seems fine here. So if you want to prove this, then we should first try to prove the following theorem. Okay, so yeah, I don't want to get over time. People will kill me because we want to go lunch. So I copy it first. So again, we have yn, and we have coordinate hyperplanes in general position with y. So we want to prove we can find an effective computable this set and also those constants. And so we have this height is bounded, and we also have this estimate, and we also have bound on the degree. But wait a minute here. So for complex people, this will be fine if you are working over slowly moving target or you're working over C. But for number theory people and for function field case, this is not yet it. We need to do something more. Okay, so. So let me point out what is important things here. So we are changing from variety X into variety Y. And remember, actually all this estimator has something to do with the coefficient of this hyperservice, with this coefficient, and also with the defining equation of X. Okay, so now think about, now we are transferred to another Y. So over there you have some defining equation, and over here you have some defining equation. So we must, since we want to prove effectiveness, we need to have control on defining equations. We need to define, we need to control the relation between the height of Y and the height of X. This is one thing. And also, we also want to know how to control those defining equations. And here is some standard things for Diophantine approximation. So let me make two remarks here. So first, the defining equation. Defining equations of X can be canonically constructed. Canonically chosen from the coefficient of its Chow form. So from its Chow form. Say fx. Okay. So if we want to work in with height, we're working with height of variety, we're working with Chow form. And then we have to compare two equations, two Chow forms, and then this, we also need to prove the Chow form of Y, the height of Chow form Y is less or equal than dn plus 1 h of Chow form of X plus degree of X dn height Q1. And this part is standard. Okay. So this will make this reduction work. Okay. So now let's see how to make this into Chow weight. So before I do that, let me define what is Chow form first. So if you allow me, I'll go a little bit faster now. So what is Chow form? So for yn in Pn, so n is q minus 1. And this y is a sub-variety defined, we know it's defined over k, function field. Or it actually works for any field. And what is Chow form here? Actually, they will uniquely determine a Chow form up to constant vector. And we have a Chow form. It's in n plus 1 block. So it's 0, 0, u, 0, n. And we have u1 to un. And this is u, n, 0. Okay, so it's in this form. Okay, and there are several properties here. So first, let me write. So the property of a Chow form is, first, it's irreducible in this polynomial field. Secondly, when does this equal to zero? It's equal to zero if only if y intersect with this generic hyperplane with this coefficient is not empty. So here, this hi, equal to ui 0 x 0 plus ui m x m. So it means this y intersect with this generic hyperplane is not empty. Then you have a zero for Chow form. So just think about the example here. So suppose y is a linear surface, linear hyperplane. Then the Chow form is simply, so to satisfy this condition, is simply the determinant. And you take U, so another hyperplane to U M minus 1, 0. Okay, so this is easy to see. Okay, so after define the Chow form, let me go to Chow weight. So what is Chow weight here? So for Chow weight, so with respect to n tuple, n plus 1 tuple of reals, then we put one more variable here. So let's put a tc0 for u00, t of cm for u0m, and same for the last one, all of them. So we put one more variable and let's write this out. So actually, u00 un plus te1 g1. Spare me with those notations. So let's arrange this in this decreasing order. So what is Chow weight? Chow weight with respect to this factor would be EYC, defined as the largest one. So this has to do with degree of contact in Mumford's invariance theorem. Okay, so after defining Chow weight, the next job is to relate our veil functions, those sum of veil functions, into Chow weight. So let me just mention the following lemma. And this is not hard to see. So if this y of k bar intersect xi0. So these are coordinate hyperplanes. So in other words, if it's in general position, this condition always is satisfied. So it's true for our case. And if it's in this case, then we have a bound for Chow weight. And it's always greater or equal than the degree of y times the Chow times this indices. Okay, so I'm not going to prove this here. So let's just see how to apply this lemma to our case. So here, now we have for each P in S. Sorry, S is a finite set of points. Okay, so so we are defined. So remember, we have a tuple of reals. We will take it as veil height, veil weight. So veil function. So for y, we take this as order y, and then minus ep of y. So if you still remember, this is equal to our veil function. It's xi for y. Okay. So after I define this number as our veil function, then next I can write so remember, we are doing this for this part. This coordinate. So we want, this is the thing we want to get for our theorem A. And for this, we know, so this is a very general trick here. So we have n of them. So let's assume this order. Let's just say this is CP0. Let's put it, just assume they are in this decreasing order. And we all know that for, it's a general trick. This sum will be dominated by the first n plus 1. So therefore, we have this method equal to I from 0 to n lambda P x I of y. OK, but in terms of Chow weight, this by definition, this is, let me just write one more time. So this is our CPI of y. OK, and now we can apply the lemma. So this lemma tells us this will be less or equal than, sorry, this is O1 here. So this will be equal to dy of, with respect to this weight. Plus O1. Okay, so this step is not so hard, but it seems to be the troublesome lemma for efficacy and variety. So they do everything first, and this is the last thing. Last lemma they did in their paper, sorry. Okay, so now we have this. So we have Chow weight here. So now we want to transfer this into Hilbert weight, because Hilbert weight is more possible to compute. And what's the relation here? So let me define Hilbert weight first. So what is Hilbert weight? So for Hilbert weight, so let me define, we are working with this vector space. And this means that we are only considering homogeneous polynomial of degree n in here. And then iy is the defining ideal for y. And when I put m, means I only consider those degree m1. Okay. So for Chow weight again, for Hilbert weight, for this, again, we have this n tuple of reals. And Hilbert weight, so this is a vector space. Okay. So you will find this is a vector space, so you can find the basis. Okay, and the dimension, this is the dimension of this vector space. Okay. So what is Hilbert weight here? S Y N C. We define this as you are taking taking all the possible monomial bases for here, and then take product with this one, and then take a maxima. So let me put this down here as sum I from 1. So you sum all over the monomial bases and take inner product. Let me explain here. Here we are taking all monomial bases. And we write this as xa1, xa to the hyn, and for each xai, we mean it's x0ai0, xi0ain. Okay, so this would be vector here, and then you take inner product with c. Okay, and whenever you get a maxima, that's your Chow weight. Okay, so now we have a very nice vector space to work with. So next step, we are doing the usual trick. So this is a vector space. I'll pick up a fixed basis. But before I do that, let me write the lemma again. This is by Abel to see. And this lemma is difficult to write. So they improve manifold result as the following. So they can compare Hilbert weight with Chow weight in this manner. And then this is important to have this bound here. Dy and maxima of Ci. Okay. So how does this help us? Okay. So let's come back here. So we have this term here. And we have this part here. Okay. And then compare with this term here. Then we can easily get the following. So let's sum together OP in S. So we have this part first. Sorry, we have this part. And then combine it. I just write directly. This will be n plus 1 sum of p minus in s, s y and c p y. And then n h y n. Okay. So we still have. So they putting in this, we get a positive sign for this. And so for this part, this Ci basically, by Fermat's theorem, or by the similar to Fermat's theorem, we know this is bounded by height. Okay, so this part will be bounded by height. And how does this m get to us? So this m is something to make this pretty small. Okay, so if we have m very big, and eventually this will be very small, so we will have an epsilon of height here. Okay. So now we transfer the whole problem into to looking for bound on this Hilbert weight. Okay, so let me just take a few minutes to see how to do this. So in other words, now we really, what we want to see is we want to prove if this part can be bounded by, if this part can be bounded by 1 plus epsilon of height y. Right? So if this is done, then we have n plus 1 plus epsilon prime or something, and height of y. Then we get our subspace theorem. So finally, I'm going to show you how to go from here to here. Okay, and this part is time up. No. So okay, don't make me even more nervous. Okay, so let's take this vector space here. And so first, we'll fix a monomial basis. So let's say we fix a monomial basis for this vector space. Okay. And after we have done that, then for each p, we choose the monomial basis so that it reaches the Hilbert weight. So for each p, we choose monomial basis, a monomial basis. Such that it reaches the Hilbert weight. So Cpy equal to sum of A I P C P Y. Okay. So sorry, here, so means this we have, for this we have x, I, a, I, p here. So we choose a monomial basis, and this for this monomial basis, we reach the char weight. Okay, so now we have fixed basis, and for each p, we have other monomial basis. So what are we going to do here? So we will take a linear transformation. So this is a monomial of degree p, degree n. Okay, and that's another basis. So, and this is a vector space over k. So we can write this as Lip. So this will be linear form in k, in function field. And then, okay, so we have this representation. So now we are pretty close to the end. So we have linear forms, and we have char weight, and we write everything in linear forms. So next step is to go to linear forms and use the second main theorem, or use the linear case of Schmidt subspace theorem. Okay, so let me go really quick here. So let's take Fy equal to phi 1 y phi hy. And so here for each p in S, we have a set for each p of S, we have a set of linear forms coming from monomial which has reached the Hilbert weight. So here we have this, so we can, and we know it's written as this. So we have this order p L I P F Y minus E P F Y. And then this term is important for us, for E P of the coefficients. And remember, it's not constant. Okay, so it's in function field. So we have this part. And this thing is actually coming from here. So let me skip a little bit here. So this part is going to get us SYN CPY. And plus this part will transfer to here. And this part has something to do, plus an O coming from here. Okay, anyway. And now we are almost done, because for this part we have our second main theorem, right? So for this part we have our second main theorem. So so this part would be less or equal than H Y M plus epsilon of height y. Okay, height of F Y. But what is the height of F Y? F Y is a monomial polynomial. Coming from monomial polynomial of degree m, so this will be n times. So this part you will get m times h y m plus epsilon of height y. So therefore, after you divide, you get this equation. So it's not the end of the story. This is really the tricky part here. So how do you control this part? Okay, so how to control this part? For number theory case, they try to use small height property. Means small height is dense. So they use Zhang Shouwu's result. Okay, but actually in here, I think one of our contributions is to eliminate this very advanced technique. We just use a very elementary tool, and this is what we usually use for diophantine approximation. So let me take a few minutes to finish up with this, how to bound the coefficient of this linear form. Okay, so now the thing is, Okay, so we write, let me put this in a lemma here. So you have all the notation there. So let's suppose this IY is, we have generators coming from chalk form, and let's write in here. So suppose this PI, we can make this into S integers. Okay, and then for X of A, let's write this as X0, A0, XM, AN. And we have a fixed thing there. So the next thing we want to see how to relate this into the fixed basis and with a coefficient, with some coefficient that you can control. And the following lemma is, so we can find a B and an alpha I in OS such that we have B times XN, which is J from 1 HYN alpha J by J mod IY. Okay, so this would be our coefficient. And as you see, all our definition for veil height and everything height, it's independent of choice of representative coordinate. So it's okay to change, to make this, the first chosen coordinate to multiply another vector. And for here, certainly this is not the end. For here, we need to bound the pole of this alpha I and B. And what we can do is, here we have all the P of alpha I is greater or equal than eta. And what is eta? Eta is coming from the pole of the chalk form. So, or the defining equation. So let's just say it's the largest pole order, taking negative. Okay, so the eta coming from the pole of the defining equation, coefficients. Okay, so this will be a negative one. Okay, so in here we can, so for here we can have a good control for the poles. And remember it's an OS integers, all the poles contain in finite in S, which is finite. So if you can control for pole on each P, then it's okay to control the height. And then we also have a control on B. It's the same here, and you also can write upper bound. So okay, so it's same here. Okay, so let me take 2 minutes to finish up. So since this is one important theorem here, so I don't want to skip it. So the proof is actually now very easy. How so? So because we know this X, this first, because they are, XA can be written as sum of this, in this, those bases. So we can, so automatically we have one presentation here. So we can write, so this is for free. Okay. And so for this we can write as, so let's write this as sum of J from 1 to HYN. And then there are finite, there are some generator here. So let's write a GI, PI. And GI are also polynomial in those variables, in those n variables. And then secondly, we can clear the denominator. Clear the denominator. So you can get, so you multiply some non-zeros, and then you change this again. So let me just just write a b here and then change this to alpha. And okay. And so now it's a linear, it's a very very classical problem now. So this we can trans. So now we try to control the coefficient of gi and the coefficient of alpha I and b. So actually, if you think about this, it's a polynomial relation. So you think about this. This will give a linear systems as variables in this b and the alpha j and the gi. Okay, and where is the coefficient comes from? The coefficient comes polynomial of pi, which is a defining idea. Okay, and so we have a linear system of equations, and then by a theorem, and in this case by theorem of Mason and Hushitos, we can transfer this into we can have into another solution and with good control on poles, and which is very easy to do. It's a linear algebra problem. So since I'm out of time, so we leave it for fun. Okay, so I'm finished up here. Thank you.